So it was 2016, and Kanye West, or Yeezy, some of you know him, his value annually was estimated, his annual income, it was around $18 million per year. For you math people out there, that's a lot of money. I'm not a math person. $18 million a year, and he's on a show. He gave an interview to Ellen DeGeneres, her talk show, and he's on there talking about the society, where things are at, how his career's going, the garden variety of topics. And at one point, he says this, quote, this is his quote. He says, if I had more resources, here it is, I think I could make a difference in this world. Now, how much more research are we talking about here, Kanye? Because I could think of some stuff we could do with that $18 million per year. Now, I know we kind of laugh at Yeezy for this one, but we kind of do this too. I mean, this is the world does look at us, maybe the way we look at Kanye. So let me put it to you this way. If you've ever gone to a shoe store and wearing a pair of shoes, and you buy another pair of shoes, or five, most of the world doesn't live that way. That's not how the world lives. If you've ever driven to a car dealership in a car, and left with another car or a newer car, most of the world does not live that way. If you don't know the exact number, like the exact number, not a guess of the number of shirts you have in your wardrobe right now, the number of shirts you have in your wardrobe, in your possession right now, most of the world doesn't live that way. If you can't know that number, you know, they know, like, I got these pants that I borrow from my brother or this, and I'm this shirt, and I got this, and that's it. If you don't know the amount of money to the dollar that you have in your possession, whether it be under your mattress or in your investments and retirement and in some bank somewhere, if you don't know that number to the dollar, most of the world does not live like you. And they might say, man, if I had what you got, I could do some stuff. I remember when we had someone from our sister church over my house, and we got in my car to go somewhere. We're sitting there. He got in the back, and he just started laughing. And I remember asking why he's laughing, and he said, because you have a house for your car. And I know that, like, that's a cliche. You might have heard that before, but he actually said it to me and meant it. He just, like, couldn't believe it. He's like, this is a house for your car. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff the world doesn't live like us. And they might look at us and do the same. They might say, man, if I had what you have, I could make a difference. And so you might say, well, here's what would help. It would make a difference. If I could be in charge, if I was a leader, if I had influence, right? John Maxwell says, leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. If I had influence to make a change, if I was the senior most ranking decision maker on things in my world or in the world I'm looking to change or in the world, I could make a difference. You would say you'd have to be royalty, right? You'd have to be the king, the big guy, whoever's in charge. The girl or boy who's in charge is the one who can make change in the world. Well, we are actually gonna look at a king this week, and we're gonna look at a king for the next several weeks. We're going to be going through a collection of talks, a series on King David. And I would say, by historical standards, he's pretty influential. I mean, let me give you a little facts about David. He lived in the 900 BC era, so BC, before Christ, the ancient world. That's what that's considered. And here's what's interesting. No person in the ancient world, in ancient history, in ancient literature, so the BC literature, no one has a longer biography. No one. No human than King David of Israel. Wow, that's amazing. No one has a longer biography of their life than King David in the ancient literature in the ancient world. He also authored the longest book, the biggest book in our Bible, the most prolific book, the most widely circulated book on planet Earth in history. He wrote the largest chunk of it. I would say he's put a dent in the universe, and God used them. So the question we're gonna ask today is, what was the criteria? How did he get picked? How does God pick people to lead and influence and make change? What is the criteria for a true king? That's the question we're gonna ask. And actually, David's story, because it's so dense and thoroughly chronicled, we actually have his selection process. And it happens in 1 Samuel chapter 16. So if you got it on your phones, if you brought the hard copy, the more spiritual copy, you can open that up. 1 Samuel chapter 16. Let me set some context before we read it. Saul is currently the king. He's the first king of Israel. He was the swing and the miss. He's just a disaster of a king for 1,000 reasons we're not gonna get into today. But one thing you have to know is God allowed Samuel to become king because he finally relented to the request of his people. Let me tell you something. God, in most of the Bible, when he punishes people, punitive measures, right? Most often, it's just simply giving people what they ask for. That's how he punishes us. That's how he punishes his people. He just finally says yes. And they had been begging him for a king. They'd been saying, we want a king, we want a king. We want to be like the other nations. And God's like, you don't want to be like the other nations. I will be your king. And they're like, no, we want a king. So finally God says yes. Let me tell you something, I believe this, that the cause for some of our loudest worship and praise in heaven will be when we realize by God's grace how many things he said no to that we asked him for that would have killed us, that would have ended our marriage, would have ended our relationship with our kids, our family. I mean, there are so many things we're gonna realize when we get to heaven that like God was holding back, that we were begging him for. Because let me tell you something, suffering is hard. You know what's really hard? Suffering that's self-inflicted. That's called regret. There are a few pains, and some of you know, and it's tender. There are a few pains in life worse than regret. Regret is getting what you asked for and not really wanting it. That's what regret is. And I believe this, God is holding back. Some of you right now have unanswered prayers. I just wanna be honest with you. God's telling you no, and you won't, right now it may hurt. Yeah, I know this is tender, but you might need to hear this morning that actually you might be thanking God a year from now that he said no, at least at the time that you wanted it. But that's the story right now, is God's finally said yes. Saul struck out, missed, so they need another king. Samuel is the most senior ranking religious leader in Israel. He's the one that God speaks to and then appoints kings with. So Samuel is summoned. God says this, verse 1, chapter 16. Now the Lord said to Samuel, you have mourned long enough for Saul. I have rejected him as king of Israel, so fill your flask with olive oil and go to Bethlehem. Some other famous people in the Bible from Bethlehem. I'll let you, your imagination try to figure that out. There's a song about it that we sing every Christmas. Okay. Find a man named Jesse who lives there, for I have selected one of his sons to be my king. So what's interesting is the word selected, it's not a bad translation. I don't wanna erode confidence in the brilliant, much smarter than me, Hebrew scholars that have translated this text for you to be able to read it. You should be able to read it and trust it. But the actual way an ancient Hebrew would have read the word selected would have been this. It's raha, is what you see behind me, right? They would have read that and seen that, and they would have interpreted in the context of eyes and seeing, being able to see. Everywhere that word shows up, it's got a root of being able to see. So it's in addition to God saying, I've got somebody picked out, he's saying it through the word and the etymology of the word raha, which means I see myself a king. God is gonna see David. Some of you know this. The world may not see you right now. The world may not know your name, but God sees you. God sees David, and this word seeing is gonna show up again in this passage. A couple verses later, Samuel arrives at the house of Jesse, knocks on the door. Eliab answers the door, who's Jesse's son, and this is what Samuel records. It says this, when they arrived, Samuel took one raha at Eliab. So God is rahaing his man, Samuel rahas Eliab, and he says, surely this is the Lord's anointed. Now, one quick side note, he's wrong. And what also is true of Samuel and what's true of us is sometimes our lived experience can scream to us something that is 100% wrong. We can believe something from our lived experience that is 100% incorrect. Your lived experience, your instincts are always guilty until proven innocent by God's word, by what he says, by what God rahas. So Samuel sees Eliab. What makes Samuel say, surely this is the one? What makes him say that? Well, you have to understand the ancient world, you're going to look for a king. If the king is not in the family, like in the lineage already, and you gotta go outside the business to hire the king, you're looking for a set of skills, a very specific set of skills, as Liam Neeson would say. You're looking for the ability to win fights. In the ancient world, if you were the guy that could beat all the other guys in the tribe, you were the leader of the tribe. If you could win the MMA fight and get in that octagon with anybody and win, you were the leader of that tribe. And then what happened was how you conquered other tribes was those other tribes had their biggest guy go up against your biggest guy, and whoever won that became the biggest guy and became the tribe that won. That's what it was. That's how you win. And that's how you conquer more and more places. That's why these kings are warrior kings. It's not like, well, I'm gonna outsource that to the DOD. No, you are the DOD. You are the king warrior. And that's how it was in the ancient world. You're gonna go appoint a king, you're gonna pick the biggest guy. So what's going on here is not that Samuel sees this dashing young man, like, you know, swooned by Eliab. No, he's looking at his resume. This is a matter of competency. Samuel looks at Eliab and says, he meets the criteria. He has the skills, he has the talent, he has the competency, the ability, the capacity to be king. That's what he's looking at. He's not attracted to Eliab. It isn't like he's overwhelmed by his good looks. He is looking at his resume and his skill set, and he's saying he meets the criteria to be a true king. And this is what God says. So Samuel says, surely this is it. God says, do not judge by his appearance or height, for I have rejected him. And then he peels back the curtain and tells us how God got there. How did God get to that judgment call? How did God get to that? The Lord doesn't raha things the way you raha things. People judge their value assessments. They judge by outward appearance, but the Lord rahas the heart. So something really important God's doing. He's drawing a line between two things. He's drawing a line between what grabs our attention, what we look at, and what we judge as valuable, what we value. So our values and our attention. And what he's saying here is that what you're looking at is a misdirection. You know, in a fight, if you want to get them, you know, if you want to win the fight, you got to kind of create a distraction, create a misdirection, and then really go. It's a misdirection. It's a trick. We're looking at this stuff, and God's saying, no, the real stuff is in here. It's in the heart. It's more poetic. It's more nuanced. It takes time to discern. It's not just the outward stuff. Now, what's the outward stuff? Well, we just heard about it in the last verse. It's the skill set, it's the competency, it's the ability. How many times do we do this? We look at leaders, we pick leaders, and we put competency first. Can they do the job? Do they have the skill set to do the job? The smartest guy in the room, the most talented artist in the room, they're the ones that should be leader, right? But God says, no, that's not what I do. That's not my criteria. My criteria, what I base as valuable, is different. It's in the heart. Now, here's what's interesting about this. You want to move what you value? Anyone here wish they loved kale and working out and doing healthy things? You want to move your values? Move your attention. Jesus puts it like this. He says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be. You want to move your heart? You got to move your treasure first. This happens all the time. I'm going to bring this up, and some of you are like, this sermon was good right up until that moment. But tithing, like, I'm gonna be honest with you, some of you are like, man, I wish I loved God more. I wish I loved the things of God. I wish I loved, you know, just being more engaged in ministry and helping people find Jesus and be more involved. I'm telling you, you move your treasure, watch your value go there. You start giving to anything, you're gonna care about it. When I first got my first car, which was not even that cool of a car, I was like 20 years old, buy a car, and I picked a car that was rated the number one car of middle-aged women, moms. It's a Hyundai Elantra. Still got it. Drove it here today. But I picked this car, and all my money is starting to go to this car, right? So what am I doing? I'm like polishing it up. I'm washing it. I'm thinking about it all the time. Let me tell you something. What you give your attention to, you're going to value. And what you give your attention to, you're going to value more. And what you value more, you're going to give more attention to. This is a cycle. And if you want to break it, it starts not with changing your values. You can't. But you can move your attention, move your treasure. Start putting it in other places. You want to care more about ministry? Start moving your time, your talent, your treasure that way. See what happens. And this is something that, for some of you right now, this is like breakthrough. You're realizing that you love things that you shouldn't love because it's what you've been looking at. When you're scrolling through your Facebook, your Instagram, you're looking at how much time, I don't even look anymore. My phone sends me emails about like how much time I've spent on these things. I don't wanna read anymore. So much time, but you know what you're doing? You're looking at all this stuff, right? It's your attention. So what's gonna happen is you're gonna start to value what other people have and you're not gonna value what you have. What's that called? Discontentment. Just move your attention. It's the way God made it. What you sow, you will reap. This is a law that God built into the way he made you and the rest of the earth. So we realize, what's the criteria for a true king? Hint, it's not what grabs people's attention. So what happens next is he goes through the next six sons. So seven sons go by. No, 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 none of them. None of them are winning. So finally, exhausted, Samuel asks Jesse, he's like, is this all you got? Jesse says this. He says, well, they're still the youngest. That's actually a pejorative word in the Hebrew. It's a kind of an insult. They're still the runt of the litter. But he's out back, is what he says. And he says this. He's out with in the fields watching the sheep and the goats. Send for him at once, Samuel said. We will not sit down to eat until he arrives. So Jesse sent for him. He, meaning David, was dark and handsome with beautiful eyes. And the Lord said, this is the one. Anoint him. Wow. So this is the guy. This is the guy with the heart thing, with what the God Rahaz in the heart. What is in that heart? What's in there that God saw? Well, what's interesting is we know that God chose him because of his heart, but we don't know what's in it based on what we just read, but we do because David tells us. You see, in one of David's Psalms, he tells us exactly what God saw in that heart. And here it is, it's Psalm 78. David writes this, he, meaning God, chose his servant, David, calling him from the sheep pens. He took David from tending the ewes and the lambs and made him the shepherd of Jacob's descendants, God's own people, Israel. He cared for them. Number one, he cared, right? With a true heart, so a caring and true heart, and he led them with skillful hands. So what is it that God uses in his criteria to lead, to bring people into positions of influence and change? What is it? It's two things, character and competency. It's both, it's not one or the other. It's character, right? You gotta be a caring and true heart, but it's also competency. You can't be an idiot. Right? It's good. Hey, Christians should care deeply about becoming skilled at whatever it is God's equipped them to do. God's not gonna call you to do something and not equip you to do it, not expect you to lean into that. He's going to equip you. He's gonna give you the means to do it. There's a lot of verses in the Bible that talk about don't be lazy. You can't be lazy. You gotta be skilled. You gotta be skilled. But man, there's a gap. There's a gap between the priority on the heart, the character of a leader, and the gap between that and his competency or her competency. So let's talk about the priority of the heart. That's what God said. He said, I chose him because I raha the heart. I look at the heart. So let's talk about what we just read. Two things, caring. Number one, what does caring mean? So if you're gonna be a leader called by God to be caring, or to be a leader that has a heart that God can use, you have to care. That's motivations over outcomes. That's internal motivation over just what you're doing, the outcomes. I get asked all the time, people say, Brian, I got this decision to make, and you know, as a pastor, what are the values that God has that I should be making this decision about? That's a good place to start. What does God value? God makes decisions based on his values. You should too. Now, here's the thing. I've made a lot of good decisions that people would look at and say, that was a tactically good leadership move. But I have done them for all the wrong reasons and motivations. There are also decisions I've made that have been swings and misses. Man, I missed. It was a bad call. I've made a lot of those. But I've made them, I know, because, man, I was just so motivated to simply honor God, love him, love the people that I'm leading and I'm trying to guide in whatever decision we're making. And the gap between God's priority on your motivations and the outcomes of your decisions and all the things you do is so wide. It is so hard to overstate how wide that is. God cares so much more about why you're doing that in your job, why you're spending that, why you're making that business move, why you're doing that in your marriage, why you're doing that with your kids. Those are the why. What are you doing it for? Do you care? To show you how wide that gap is, listen to how Paul puts it in 1 Corinthians. This is what Paul writes. He's describing the gap between these two things. He says, if I could speak in all the languages of earth and angels, but I didn't love others, I didn't care, I didn't have a caring heart, I'd only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I had the gift of prophecy and I understood all of God's secret plans and possessed all the knowledge, and if I had such a faith I could move mountains, but I didn't love people, I'd be nothing. If I gave everything to the poor and sacrificed my body, I could boast about it. But if I didn't love others, if I didn't care, I would have gained nothing. It's something, this is hard to hear, and you need to hear it now while you still have breath in your lungs and time to deal with this. But let me tell you something. Some of you are doing a lot of things that everyone around you is doing this. You know, you're doing good stuff. It's good. But in God's ledger, in God's economy, man, he sees your heart. And if you're doing it for this reason, if you're doing it to look good, if you're doing it, I mean, even religious stuff, right? If you're doing the religious stuff because you hope God blesses you in other areas of your life you're looking to get blessed in, or fear. Fear is like one of the most selfish, self-preservation. The fear that God's going to bring any kind of suffering into your life. You're just doing all the church stuff because you don't want to bring any suffering. Heaven forbid God allow you to go through some. If that, look, that's a zero in God's ledger. The motivation is self, right? In all of those examples I just gave. And God's telling you, like, look, listen, you've been doing a lot of good stuff. Donut hole with me. Why? God cares about the motive. And some of you need to hear this say as an encouragement. Some of you have a big decision to make. You got a big call to make. And it's weighing on you this morning. You're like, came in thinking about it. You're like, you know, I'm praying, like, Lord, I hope they don't get distracted from worshiping you. But you're like, I can't. I just got this big decision I got to make. Can I be honest with you? You may have to make a decision because time is up, right? Not making a decision is a decision. So you have to make a decision about whatever it is you're thinking about right now. And you might get to that moment where you got to make it. And you're not 100% sure if it's the right call. In fact, you're like 50-50. I don't really know if this is a good move. Let me tell you what you can know. You can know your motives. You can know your motives. And let me tell you something. You can have that conversation with God. You can say, Lord, I have no idea if I'm making the right call. This might be a terrible idea. But I know right now, Jesus, right now, all I want to do is serve you with my life. All I want to do is I want to make a good decision because I care about my family. I care about my kids. I care about these people in the business that I'm leading. I care about them. I love them. And I'm going to make this call because not making this call is a call too. You got to make a decision. But I'm going to make this, and I don't know if it's right or wrong. But I know I'm doing it. I know I'm making this decision this way because I love you and I love these people. And then go to bed that night and sleep good, knowing that that's all God looks at. That's all he sees. In fact, the world, you might even be called, God might even call you to make a bunch of decisions the world thinks are stupid. Like Jesus, right? Going to the cross. The world laughed at him. He's on the cross crying out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then he dies. Everybody goes, see, that was a waste. And in that moment, because he loved you, he cared about you, he cared about you, he was honoring God, and it was the right call. You might, in the eyes of the world, have to look like an idiot based on your decisions. But in your heart, you can know why you're doing it. And if it's for God, you can't lose. You can't make a bad call when you're motivated to do nothing but love people and love God. Let that set you free tonight. Let you sleep. I hope that you sleep good tonight knowing that's all God's looking at. For some of you, it's a challenge. For some of you, it's gonna encourage you. So here's what we know. Number one, caring. Motivation over outcome. Or I'm sorry, motives over outcomes. Number two, true. What does it mean to have true character or a true heart? It means you're choosing character over reputation. That's integrity, right? Integrity, your character. Reputation, something else. Let me tell you something. Reputation is what people know of you. Character is who you really are. Reputation is what people know. Character, that's who you really are. And let me tell you something, what happens every day you get up, and what do you want to do? You want to get the kudos, the applause. Let me tell you something. It is really hard once that reputation gets bigger and once that reputation gets known by more people, it's going to be really hard for you to not want to keep stoking that fire. Listen, guys, I'm being real with you. Like as a pastor, what do you think? What do you think pastors want, right? We want to be known as good people. Like, you know, hopefully they know I'm the pastor because I'm the godliest guy in the room. Like this, right? We want that. And let me tell you something. That's not true. My wife will tell you that. My kids will tell you that. But here's what's true. If the gap between what people know of you and what people are applauding and what they like of you and your reputation, if the gap between that and your character is getting wider, you know what that's doing? That's called loneliness. You know, some people, when they see hypocrites, they look at them with disdain. Not me, because I know what it's like to be one. I mean, let's be, we all are hypocrites, but man, I know what it's like to be one. I know what it's like to go to the youth group and keep the image up as a pastor's kid looking good, but in going to school, doing other things, just talking a certain way that I know I wouldn't talk at youth group. I know what that's like. And when we look at hypocrites, we look at them like, I know that guy at work. I know what they're really like. Let me tell you something. A hypocrite is one of the loneliest places. Because you don't even know who you are. You don't know if you're that person at work or that person at church. You don't know who you are. And the wider that gap is, the more lonely. Because here's what's going on. People are clapping and they're affirming the reputation. And you know inside, none of that's for you. None of that's for you. None of that's for me. Because the real me, they wouldn't applaud for, they wouldn't love. And you're not receiving love. So the whole time you're going, you're just drying up. And let me tell you something. People are commanded by God to love you, but they're called to love the real you. Like God says, love each other. So they're commanded to love you, but they're commanded to love the real you. And the real you isn't getting any love if no one knows the real you. Find people in your life. Doesn't have to be everybody. Doesn't have to be all your Facebook friends. Let me tell you that. There's some of you that don't, the Facebook friend doesn't even know all that stuff, okay? But your friends, like people close, your family, like people gotta know who you really are. Be closing that gap, kill that gap, or it's gonna kill you. But real leaders, they know how to do that. They're working on that. They're focused on character over reputation. This is hard stuff, man. This is really hard, isn't it? This heart of a king? I don't have any of this stuff. And let me be honest with you. You talk to people who have it, they're not gonna look at you and say, you know, I got this because I just tried harder. Ask somebody, ask a person of deep character, ask them, how'd you get there? What'd it take? And they're not gonna tell you, well, in 1995, I decided. No. Here's what happened. Something hard. The people who have the most love in this world, who give, I mean, I'm telling you, cancer survivors, if you've been a cancer survivor, you are some of the most loving people. You give so much for other people who go through stuff. The people in my life who've shown up and been some of the most generous, kind, loving people of deep, godly character are the people who've been through the hardest stuff. Because this is what we know. A kingly heart is not self-made. Something has to happen to you. And usually, if not always, it's something costly. Why? Because character is of high value. It's always going to be costly. It's worth more than anything. Can I be honest with you? Some of you are enjoying your competency. It's growing your business. It's growing your family. It's keeping things in order. Everything's in its place. You got high competency. You're a really good mom. You're a really good dad. You're a really good leader with the skill sets of what those take, and things are going good. But one day, let me tell you something. One day, you're going to be old. One day, you're not going to be able to enjoy all the stuff that your competency acquired. One day, you're not going to be able to enjoy everything. And the only thing you're going to have are the people. The relationships. And what's that going to be built on? Character. Whether or not you cared. Whether or not you loved them. Whether or not you gave yourself for them and served them and loved them. Whether or not you were true to them. That's it. That's why Jesus puts it like this. He says, blessed. You want to be blessed? In the ancient world, blessed was happiness. So just replace that. Okay, you want to be happy? Don't seek happiness. He says, you want to be happy? Seek righteousness. It's character, right? Righteousness. If you seek happiness, you not only are not going to get happiness, but you ain't going to get righteousness either. Bankrupt. But if you seek righteousness, stop trying to pursue comfort and maximizing at the highest volume. No. That is a failed quest. Rather, seek righteousness, whatever that means, even if it costs you everything. It's worth everything. It has to happen to you. Something has to happen to you. Something has to break in, has to intervene. You can't just work your way up into better character. We've all tried that, and it don't work. How do we know that this is what happened to David? Because it did. And what's interesting is this thing that happened to David, it comes to us from the passage we just read, and it comes to us from what's not written there. You know what's not written there? All the stuff David was doing as a shepherd. See, David didn't choose shepherding. He didn't aspire to be a shepherd. He didn't set out to work on his character by way of shepherding. You know what happened? He was just born. Here's why. In the ancient Hebrew, you don't get to choose your job. There's not like, okay, kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? There's none of that in the ancient world. It's like, hey, listen, we're all gonna die if we all help each other out. So we're all gonna get jobs. Here's what we're gonna do. Okay, mom's gonna do this. Dad's gonna do this. Kids, y'all are doing this. And the youngest, the runt, by default, no debate, no negotiation, no application process, no gifts assessment to see if he's gifted for it. By default, the youngest Hebrew boy went out into the pasture, the field. David didn't choose it. It chose him. And you know what chose him? You know what shepherding is? It is days, weeks, months, years of nothing. Just you and the sheep. You're not in the beauty pageant room. You're not in the room where all the decisions are being made, right? You're not in that room where the big decisions of influence and leadership are getting made. You're not in that room. You're out in the middle of nowhere doing monotonous, boring sheep work. Nothing important. The lowest job on the totem pole, that's where you are. And it's punctuated by moments of sheer terror when those predators come to steal your sheep and you gotta fight them off. Or punctuated by moments of just downright miserably cold winter weathers and wind, or drowning in a pool of your own sweat at night in a hot summer night. It is punctuated by miserable weather, moments of sheer terror, and filled with unimportant, boring sheep work. Listen to me, some of you need, this is the breakthrough. This is your breakthrough today. I'm gonna read you a passage of what that boring, old, outside, on the outer rim of the solar system type stuff that you're living in right now, that you're doing, and this is the breakthrough. This is the passage, okay? I want you to hear what I'm about to read. This is David trying to convince Saul that he's gonna slay Goliath. He's gonna take down the biggest problem the nation of Israel is facing. He's gonna make a difference that'll save a nation. And this is how David builds his case. David persisted. I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats. And when a lion or bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it again to this pagan Philistine Goliath too, for he has defied the armies of the living God, the Lord. It was him the whole time. The Lord who rescued me, saved me. I didn't save myself. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine. And Saul said, go for it. Get in there. Hear me. Some of you right now have a Goliath that you think you are so far from arm's reach, it's not even funny. You're so far out of being able to take it down. There's a nation you think needs leading, some nation in your world that needs leadership, needs change. There's a Goliath, and you're not even in the room where those decisions are being made. You've been sidelined in your mind by some physical disease you got, some physical disability, maybe your family and your upbringing. Maybe it was the business that failed. Maybe it was that first marriage that failed. Something. In your life, in your past, you believe has sidelined you from making a difference in your world or in the world of the people you care about. And you're reading today, for the first time, maybe God's opened his eyes that nope, I am actually gonna use it. It's gonna be used. But first, you gotta see me in it. That's step one for you today, is just to honor and see that it wasn't the job, it wasn't that spouse, it wasn't the ex-boyfriend, the ex-girlfriend, it wasn't that school, it wasn't that boss, it was God. And it's God that's got you this far. And until you see that, you don't know how to slay that Goliath. You got nothing in you to do it until you see it as God. You see, your next level of impact and influence is not something outside your reach. It's not something out there. It's not another $18 million per year. It's not another net worth. It's not another promotion. It's not another job. It's not something outside of you. It's something that you have right now in your hands that you have to let go of. Let God lead. Recognize Him as the leader and the giver in that. Let Him use it for His values. You see, David was dripping with oil, the anointing of God on his life, right there in that moment. Samuel anointed him with the oil, poured it on his head. Here it is. While he smelled like sheep, not after. Right in the middle of it. Some of you right now, you gotta see your present, not just your past, but your present as a moment that God can anoint. And until you see it, you got no hope for the future. You gotta see it. You can't get to college without passing junior high. You gotta stop and recognize God as the one in your life right now. And that's why this whole story points to another king. It's another king. And his name isn't David, his name is Jesus. It's the other forgotten son born in Bethlehem who took the lowest rung on the ladder in all of cosmic history, which is your sin and my sin, and he paid for it. And that's why he calls himself the good, the true, not just king, shepherd. John 10, Jesus, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd not just only fights off the tigers, fights off the lions and the bears, but he even allows himself to be eaten so that you and I might live. That's what this story is about. That's what your story is about. That's what the next 7 weeks are gonna be about. Do not miss one of them, because God's telling you right now, you're out in the pasture, you think you're not gonna be used by me. I've got a plan, I wanna use you. I want to do it the way I did it with David. I want you to trust me with your life. Let's stand. We're going to sing a song to reflect on this, but there's something inside of you maybe that's wondering if I got enough in me, if I have enough to do this, and the answer is you don't. Kanye was right. You don't need $18 million. Not enough. It's never enough. But you know what Kanye's most recent album was after he gave his life to the Lord or professed faith? You know what the name of his album is? He's right about this, that Jesus is King. We're gonna worship him in a moment. But let me pray for us. Lord, in a room this size, there are a bunch of people here that do not believe they've got enough to make a difference. And you're telling them this morning that they're right. They're right, they don't got enough in themselves. It's not in them, it's in you. And you wanna use them. You want to use what is in their hands, but they got to let go of it. So Lord, I pray in this short time, in this short song, there would be just a moment where you do that. You bring their attention to you. You bring their heart to you by doing that. And then they loosen their grip, they let go, and they take down the Goliath in their life. And they would give you the credit for it, because it was you that gets the credit in their present and their past and in our future. And in Jesus' name, all of God's people said, amen. Amen.